It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Welcome in. It's Friday, May 10th. We're back. Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Borgannoni, and I am joined, as always, by Matthew putting the tea in high tea bets.
Speaking of tea, I am actually drinking a nice hot tea. It's green tea, Kyle, if you're wondering. Yeah, dude. I mean, we're here. Like, it's football time. Yeah, like, it's, I mean, let's be real, we still have a lot of time to go until the season. But I have found that there are so many people on Twitter, in our Discord, that are just like us, that cannot get enough best ball in their life. And it's so funny when you see it, like, especially on Underdog. You log in, you're like, okay, cool, they just dropped a new contest. Like, awesome. I got some time before this fills. Nope. That is the state of best ball season and football season, so I'm here for it. I love it.
It's funny how best ball is in the consciousness of fantasy football world. I mean, realize that fantasy football is a subset of football world and a subset of sports world and everything else. So it is different. Like, there are people outside of the circle that say, like, why are you drafting now? There's people that know about best ball, will casually jump in, and, you know, you get to take their lunch money. But right now, when a contest opens on Underdog, I feel this in my soul going, I want to get in on this, but I know they're about to put out another one. The puppy just opened, which is a great contest, super low stakes, you know, $5 entry. There's going to be a puppy two, puppy three, puppy four, like all of those, to the point of, okay, it's May 10th. A week. I'll give it a week.
It's wild, honestly. Yeah, I think there were four puppies last year that came out, and they've got a bunch of other ones too coming out that are even lower stakes. They've got some high stakes stuff. So it's just great to see where best ball, you know, came from 2 or 3 years ago to where it is now, where no matter what your bankroll is like, there is a contest for you.
Yeah, there is a break in my best ball spreadsheets where once you get to 2021 and you start getting Underdog, not only do the roster constructions change, but the way that we drafted, I talked about that a lot last week, rookie wide receivers changed. And then when you look at points added, which is something that I'm putting together an article that will be a part of the best ball primer, but points added is what we care about for a player. You don't get 100% of the points unless your name is Cooper Kupp from a couple years ago, where it's like you use his score every single week. Like, you're getting 60, 70, 80% is like an insane number to get from a player. And I'm just looking at the data and going, wow, like there's so much to get our heads around, so much to talk about with roster construction. And on this episode, you and I will be talking about ADP values and fades that are kind of reflected in our ranking. And I just want to give like a little preface. If you're driving when you're listening to this, pull over to the side of the road.
Oh my goodness. Get the barf bag ready.
I apologize. You know, my family, they won't listen to this episode, so they don't really care. But I apologize to the entire Borgannoni family, my ancestors, everybody else, because there are a couple of ADP values that are gross. They're gross. I hate that I'm bringing them up. I hate that I'm doing it. But I am compelled based on the way that the field is responding and the way the field is too overconfident. I think that's the game theory part of best ball that you can use as leverage. It's what we talk about with DFS, where if people feel a certain way and just locked in, this is a 90% outcome, this is going to happen, you can use that against them. So I think you understand where I'm coming from, right?
I mean, that's literally the definition of like playing DFS tournaments, is like the field thinks this is going to happen 80% of the time, 90% of the time, but we know just football, the variance is unreal. And we talk about that a lot on this show, of like, you need to recognize that when you play these games, this is a game we're playing, and you're playing against other people who think they know what's going to happen. And the NFL is chaos every single season, whether it's injuries, coaches get fired, scheme changes, backup quarterback comes in, you know, whatever, like stuff happens. So that's it. You try to take advantage of the overconfidence in the market.
Right now, Betts, you have an article up on the site that's part of the UDK Plus. So it's a premium article that is 2024 zero RB targets for best ball. We talked a little bit about those last week, but just give a plug for that because we're going to be updating it all throughout the summer.
Yeah. So right now it's on the site. We wanted to get that up early because, again, people are drafting, you know, already in high volume. But once the primer comes out in the UDK Plus, once you're in there, we're just going to pin it at the top and you'll be able to see basically our updated list throughout the summer. It's not a static article. We're not just going to, you know, write it in May and then just leave it alone. We have our top zero running back, late round running back targets that Kyle and I, you know, we had a meeting, of course, very, very corporate. Like, we had our suits on, you know, notebooks. It was very serious, and came up with our consensus list. So this is the guys that we're targeting in our drafts. We lay out the reasons why and kind of how it fits from a structural standpoint, a player take standpoint, team stack standpoint, all that stuff. But like I said, it's just going to live in the best ball primer, and it'll be updated throughout the summer as injuries happen, as we get news, as ADPs change, stuff like that. So we wanted to give you a resource to reference, you know, throughout the summer as you're drafting.
Yeah, I love that we put our heads together. I like that we had a meeting and we called it the best ball meeting and the zero RB meeting. So like, not just you and I who get to be over DFS and betting, but just a subset. So I just, man, we need to get something else on the calendar next week. Instead of talking zero RB, you just want to talk like late round tight ends, a whole meeting about it.
I mean, it basically just be the Greg Dulcich show, right?
Yeah, and Kate Otten. That's it. We'll just talk about Kate Otten once again for another year and profit from it. But yeah, go to ultimatedraftkit.com if you want to get in on our best ball rankings, best ball primer, and also, of course, the Dynasty Pass. But you mentioned it. The quick question of the day is, name a guy who's going after round 16. We're kind of also saying this because we're putting out a late round targets article as well. Just going to fill that with players that we think can be valuable, good win rate players. And I will mention Greg Dulcich. Why? Like, why would I talk about a player who played two games last year and you probably forgot that he was even part of fantasy football world? One, his hamstrings right now, I've labeled them as optional. That's like where he is on like the injury report. That's his problem.
Just running around out there, no hammies.
It was an issue last year. Okay. Right now it's just Greg Dulcich and our boy Adam Trautman, who are the tight ends on the team. And this pass catching core is atrocious. And so I'm really looking at is Greg Dulcich is going undrafted for the most part. If you have a three tight end build, I do not mind grabbing Greg Dulcich with your last pick, because all we care about at the tight end position for best ball fantasy in general, are they athletic? Can they earn targets? And Greg Dulcich was that player coming out of college. His receiving yards market share, his yards per team pass attempt, which is a very sticky stat for tight ends, was incredible. It's up there in a Brock Bowers type tier when he was at UCLA. The mustache maniac, which is what I like to call him because he's a yak guy. His profile was actually better than Kyle Pitts coming out of college in terms of market share. Now, this Denver Broncos team could be terrible. And you could look at it and say, why would I want to pair him with a rookie quarterback? Well, Bo Nix has kind of shown in college that he's willing to target people close to the line of scrimmage. So I think it sets up well if you want to throw a dart at a tight end that won't be drafted in tournaments. Like, there, I mean, Greg Dulcich, I would say, is only going to be drafted like 30% of the time, 25% of the time when it's all said and done. So he's a tournament play that I like for leverage. And I'll get to my other name because I have a quarterback that is going at pick 197, pro tease here, that I also like a lot. But I'll save that for later.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Yeah, with Dulcich too, like, the thing is that he doesn't have to do a ton at this price to pay this off, obviously. And when you look at the depth chart, I mean, Cortland Sutton is fine, right? He's fine. He's a solid wide receiver too in the NFL, I think. Troy Franklin fell in the NFL draft. That's a concern. We like his profile, but that's a concern. Josh Reynolds is just a dude. They lose Jerry Jeudy. I mean, they really don't have, like, Marvin Mims did nothing in year one. They really don't have alpha wide receivers or pass catchers on this team. So if you're asking, you know, is there a path? I think there's a path. You know, and this is a guy that people were drafting, I don't know, last year before training camp in, like, what, round 14, 15, 16? So you're getting a huge discount right now on a guy that I think still has upside. Let's hope he can stay healthy. I'm going to also throw out a tight end that's late. And this is not a player that I would recommend, like, getting a huge chunk of in your exposures. But I think taking some Tucker Kraft makes a lot of sense in that I think the market is just overconfident in who the tight end in Green Bay is that you want. Do I think the odds-on favorite is likely Luke Musgrave? Sure. Do I think they should be separated by, I don't know, 60 picks in ADP or whatever it is? That I do not think is right, because when you look at when Luke Musgrave went out of the lineup last year, Tucker Kraft was pretty good, 14.5% target share in his seven starts. Also was more athletic in terms of after the catch numbers, 7.1 yards after the catch per reception for Tucker Kraft, just 5.1 for Luke Musgrave. So it's one of those guys that it's an ambiguous situation. I don't mind it as, like you said, your tight end two, tight end three. I would not go all in with your bankroll here. There's obviously volatility, but that's why he's going in round 18.
Somebody will.
And sometimes going undrafted. So I just like that. I mean, we like the Packers offense, so let's get some exposure for really cheap.
What's so funny is when I look at this offense, Packers offense, like every single week down the stretch from like week 12 on, it was a different dude. Like, remember the Bo Melton week where it was like, oh man, this dude came out of nowhere because they had injuries, puts up 100 yards in the playoffs, right? Jaden Reed was actually kind of an afterthought. He went catchless in one game. I think he had like four catches total and for 20 something yards. Like, it will be weird to see a Dontavian Wicks week, a Dobbs week, Reed week, a Christian Watson week. So I like targeting this offense because we're not quite sure the order. I mean, ADP tells us it's clearly Reed and clearly Musgrave here, but I think you could have two guys that beat ADP here. And it's still a value team, right? Like Jordan Love, last time I saw, was like quarterback 9. And when you get that kind of pricing, you can have a couple other pass catchers come alongside. So I think you're just saying, like, buy in the offense and just don't be overconfident. Like, this is ADP is going to be wrong on these players.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And think about it too, like DFS. Like, if you were going to run a 20 max set or a 150 set and show up with, you know, 5 or 6 Love stacks, like, I'd probably want different iterations of that, like some with Reed and Kraft, some with Dontavian Wicks and Christian Watson, you know, like, kind of mix it up, get your exposures. We love the offense. The question is just like, who is it going to be? And that's the uncertainty. And in best ball tournaments, in DFS and fantasy football, uncertainty is a good thing because it keeps ADP down. And if you hit on the right, you know, players and picks, obviously it pays off in a massive way. So that's why his ADP is depressed. That's why the Packers ADP in general is depressed for the upside that the offense has.
Yeah. And so there's other late round targets we'll talk about. I'm really intrigued by the Giants wide receivers because Neighbors is drafted way up there. And then it's like Hyatt and Slayton and Wandale, and they're just all buried. But I think there's some value there, especially if Darren Waller's retiring. I wish Antonio Gibson qualified for this question, but he's at 170. Dude, nobody wants to take Antonio Gibson. And maybe I'm on an island. Maybe I'm the old man yelling at the clouds, but like, RB53 is egregious to me.
I mean, the government, Kyle, doesn't want you to know that Antonio Gibson actually led all qualified running backs in missed tackles forced per attempt. Again, the government does not want you to know that, but this podcast does.
Yeah. We talked about him last episode, and I just will probably talk about Antonio Gibson a ton this year. So what could go wrong on that? Let's talk about some fades and values.
Best ball bonanza.
So the term value and the term fade are a bit relative in fantasy football because depending on the format that you play in, anybody can be a value. Like I mention this all the time to people. They're like, hey, do you like this player? It's like, well, I kind of like where they're going in best ball, but in dynasty, I think they're a tricky player. In redraft, it's 1 year and I could see it work. In DFS, I love their salary. Like, I just gave you four formats where you could really have some nuance to a player's value. So for us, when we're talking about value, talk about opportunity costs. Where are they going in the draft? What do they need to do to pay that off? And a lot of times it's the field is way too overconfident. This is the situation. This is what I've seen in the past. This is how it's going to be. A lot of times I mention that statistics that we bring up are descriptive. They describe, here's what happened in 2023. You know, this player did this. But they're not always predictive of this is what Nico Collins is going to do in year three, right? Like, we didn't see Nico Collins putting up 3.1 yards per run, one of the greatest seasons ever. So any thoughts, bets on what we mean by values? And then let's also introduce the word arbitrage. It's not a perfect word. Sometimes it doesn't really make a lot of sense in fantasy football. But for our case, I think we can find players that are cheaper and have good value.
Yeah, when I think about a value, especially in a best ball format, it's like, you know, can a player going later in a draft give you something similar to someone that's way more expensive? When you think about that arbitrage concept, it's like, why would I pay a fifth round price for a player whose, you know, most likely outcome is very similar to that of someone going in round 9 or round 10? And so I think about it from like an opportunity cost standpoint. Can I get something for cheaper later in my draft? And then, you know, you're thinking about it too, like, how often is this guy going to hit my lineup in best ball? Again, you don't set your lineup, right? You just, if the guy has a spike week, you're in there. And I'm thinking about that too. Like, can a guy crack my lineup 5, 6, 7 times going in, you know, round 10, 11, 12, something that's just too late for a guy that has that archetype in him? That's what I think about with value. It's not that the guys going before him are bad picks. Again, it's just think about opportunity cost. Think about what you're passing on in the early rounds to take a player who could profile similarly to someone that's going much later in the draft.
I'm going to start us off with a player that I hate that I'm higher on. I hate it because this is a volatile player. But we kind of care about that, you know, characteristic or trait in best ball. And it's George Pickens, wide receiver, Pittsburgh Steelers, entering year 3. He's going right now as wide receiver 28. Okay, so he's going in beginning of the 5th round. And what I want to say about George Pickens is that he's not just a jump ball guy. Those are the highlights that you see. And he's one of those wide receivers that like ends up being a TikTok wide receiver. It's like, oh, did you see what he did, you know, with his hands, or he got his feet in, or, you know, here's this, you know, awesome back shoulder grab. And that's kind of what he's characterized as. I did something very, very wrong. Betts, I did not go outside yesterday because I decided to watch every single target for George Pickens' 2023 season.
Yeah, you're looking a little pale there, buddy.
Hey, you know what? 104 targets. Let's go. It really didn't take that long, to be honest. But the crazy thing about George Pickens is you remember his rookie year where 36% of his targets were 20-plus air yards down the field. Like, they were a lot of deep targets, and that was an insanely high rate. In 2023, it changed a lot, where he ended up seeing most of his targets in the intermediate area and then more in the short. So I think that there is a progression of this player where he kind of got to grow and have a more nuanced route tree. If you watched, and I did, I watched all of them. He had more intermediate receptions. I found this wild. So that's 11 to 19 yards than Garrett Wilson did. And Garrett Wilson saw a stupid amount of targets. So he caught the ball more in that area. They both had terrible quarterbacks, but same numbers, Devonta Smith, DK Metcalf. I think that's kind of the mold of where I can see him be, is this downfield threat that can win in the intermediate area. And if you look where he grew this past year, it was in zone coverage. So I'm giving a lot of football takes of where I think George Pickens is different than what people think. But the crazy thing is, this is an offense that is begging for a wide receiver to see 23, 24% of targets with Deontay Johnson gone. Last year in 4 games with Deontay Johnson off the field, he saw a 24% targets per out run and almost 3 yards per out run. So I think the opportunity is there, but what's crazy is you're getting a player that if you really just like peel back, like Garrett Wilson's had a stupid amount of targets. I believe it's 310 targets, the most ever through 2 years. But based on the raw numbers, when you look at it, George Pickens has been not that far behind in fantasy points per game. And you're getting a player 3 rounds. I mean, Garrett Wilson is going in the 1st round, right there at the 1-2 turn. And I think you get similar production, someone that clearly can be an alpha, about 4 rounds less of a price. So they're the same, you know, year. We kind of forget about that. Like, George Pickens was a part of that class, and he's only 23 years old. So he's actually younger than your boy Xavier Leggett, which is just wild.
I mean, who isn't, but though? Let's be honest.
That's it. We're all younger than him. I just think that George Pickens is a player that we know we like for spike weeks. We know that he could increase his target share and take a third-year leap, and yet you're not having to pay this price. So at wide receiver 28, I have teams where George Pickens is my wide receiver 3. Cool. I don't need you to do what Garrett Wilson has to do. And last year, Garrett Wilson saw a ton of targets and was terrible, a terrible advance rate player, despite seeing all those. So is George Pickens a value? I know he's scary. Trust me, I get it. But is he a value?
Yeah, he's an interesting player just because I think, like you said, the rhetoric around him is, yeah, throw it up at the sideline and just hope that he's going to catch it, right? But this is a player who has shown, I think, the ability to become a better football player year over year. And if you go back to his last season at Georgia, remember, he tore his ACL late in his college career. So like coming out, it wasn't that surprising that as a rookie, he wasn't incredible. But, you know, he takes a step forward in year two, as players often do at wide receiver. And the peripheral metrics are very good. The team moves on from Deontay Johnson, showing that they probably trust George Pickens to fill that role. The concern, obviously, is that this feels like a Drake London situation 2.0, just because of Arthur Smith and how much they're going to run the football. And, you know, the passing volume won't be there. So it's like, sweet, this guy got a 28% target share this year, a 30% target share, but right, they don't throw, right? It's like, that's my concern, is just that I don't know that he has that explosion in him to give you just an outlier huge season, you know, from this ADP. But will he give you spike weeks? Absolutely, I do think he will. So yeah, I'll have my exposure, I'll mix him in. He's a guy that I truthfully have been, I think, too low on in the past, that I'm coming around to, just because you look at the depth chart, you look at the competition for targets. We love Roman Wilson, but let's be honest, Roman Wilson is a rookie. The other dudes, not a chance. Like, this is George Pickens, it's his show right now, obviously, and there's no one to take targets from him.
Yeah, I'm trying to make sure that in my process of evaluating players, and maybe that's what this episode is, I'm giving two players that I've been lower on in the past based on the archetype. Like, oh, he's just a deep ball guy, or, you know, he's just a TikTok kind of wide receiver. By the way, I don't have TikTok, so I don't really know what they look like. I just hear people talk about it. And yet, when you peel back the numbers, you go, this guy improved by almost a full yard in his zone yards per out run. He killed man coverage, by the way. So against man, he was 3.43 yards per out run, which is an incredible, incredible number. So there are red flags here, but you're not having to pay the same price as Garrett Wilson or Drake London. So George Pickens is somebody I wish he was going around like pick 60, but that's just kind of the landscape we have right now. But yeah, wide receiver 3, you can get him there. Let's take a break, and then we'll get to hear about Betts' guy.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
All right, next up, Betts is going to give us another wide receiver value in best ball. And I got to agree, this player fits the mold of a player that's better in best ball.
Let's talk about a guy who averages in 2 years in the NFL over 16 yards per catch and over 11 yards per target. If you think about like just spike week potential, boom, bust, gives you those huge weeks, but disappears at times, and that's okay at this price. It is Rashid Shaheed. And when I think about where he goes, you know, he goes around like 120 overall, wide receiver 57. He's a guy that at that point, like, I hate that range of wide receiver, right? Where it's like the Cortland Suttons of the world, and sometimes Josh Downs goes in that range, like just kind of like that back of wide receiver, you know, 5-6-ish tier that like doesn't feel great. But Rashid Shaheed in that range for me is a target because of his archetype. Very similar profile to me of someone that goes way earlier, Christian Watson, Jameson Williams. Like, to me, there's no difference in the archetype of a player like that compared to Jameson Williams and Christian Watson. So for Rashid Shaheed, we know the deal. Like, it's big plays, it's spike weeks, it's all of that. But this Saints offense, to me, in the past has been so archaic with their former OC, with Pete Carmichael. I mean, it literally, like, no creativity, no pre-snap motion, none of that type of stuff that works in the NFL. And you look at, like, you know, the teams that lead the league in, like, yards per play, points per drive, all that sort of stuff. It's the teams you would expect. You know, it's the Dolphins, it's the Niners, it's all those teams that are doing the stuff you should do before the snap. The Saints were not doing that. They were dead last in pre-snap motion.
Heat, man.
Pete, come on, buddy. Get it together. Watch some film. But in comes Clint Kubiak, who, by the way, comes from San Francisco as the pass game coordinator. So I think we're going to see a lot more pre-snap motion from New Orleans this year. I think that guy could be Rashid Shaheed to kind of use as like that chess piece with his speed to get him moving before the snap and see what happens. And you think about taking away some of the football guy takes, like, just look at the depth chart too. I mean, you know, Bub Means was an addition in the fifth round. It's fine. Cedric Wilson was added in free agency. Whatever. Michael Thomas is gone. Like, it is Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed in this passing tree. And I love where he goes, because if you are in on Olave like we are, you can grab Olave in round two. You can wait forever to get the second stacking partner with Rashid Shaheed. And you can literally wait forever, round 17, round 18, to tack on Derek Carr at the end if you want to. So Rashid Shaheed, to me, goes a little bit too late. To me, he's an arbitrage, like I said, on guys like Hollywood Brown, Christian Watson, Jameson Williams.
Yeah, his advance rate last year was about 18%, which is above expectation. He was going a little bit later, but in terms of competition for targets, I mean, the tight ends are a crapshoot, man. Like, I never know it's going to be a Juwan Johnson week, or are they going to try to use Taysom? You know, they have Foster Moreau, and then A.T. Perry is interesting. But what you need for best ball, I agree, it's Rashid Shaheed from Weber State, by the way. Well, you know, what a shout out for a college. So I like the name. I think it does take a little faith in the Saints offense not being what it used to be, but that's what we care about, right? We're not just looking at last year and saying, well, it's how bad they were, and all Derek Carr does is check it down. It's like, there is room for growth in this team, and I do like the offensive coordinator switch. So I will be having some Rashid Shaheed exposure. I also have a lot of Chris Olave exposure, but that's like my third year in a row. So you're all over Olave, right?
Oh yeah. He's one of my favorite round two picks right now. And you know, we were on that last year as kind of a round three type of guy. I would say overall that didn't work out a ton, but never a question about the talent. It's just a matter of, will things break right this year? Let's hope so.
Did it work out? I mean, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is like, this is the journey, you know, the friends we made along the way. And with Chris Olave, it was super frustrating the whole way. It was So, if you had Chris Olave in redraft last year, I'm just sorry. Really, really sorry. But I'm in this year. Especially, I think I saw a stat recently with pre-snap motion. He's been awesome, but they never use him doing it. So,
Pete was ruining it.
Yeah, I think he was the offensive coordinator for 15 or 16 years. I mean, if we were doing this for 16 years, then, like, you know, we're going to be losing our ways. I mean, the ballers are at 10. So, like, 5 years from now, they're going to just be washed up.
Done. Yeah, they're at the cliff right now. Over the next couple of years, you'll see it.
The age cliff, the production decline, probably.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about some quarterbacks that are values. I have to make sure I mention Kyler Murray, because he's going as quarterback 8, 80th off the board. And he is a very clear to me arbitrage play off of Lamar Jackson and Anthony Richardson. Like, there's a percentage chance that not only could Kyler outscore them, but, you know, just give you the advance rate you need where you get to stack him easily with either Marv or Trey McBride. Like, it's just pretty clean with that. So I don't want to spend a ton of time on Kyler. I think he'll be one of our, you know, highest exposure guys. And in my rankings, that's reflected. Like, I have Kyler Murray ahead of CJ Stroud because CJ Stroud is going way too early. But any other Cardinals that you would attach to him that you're interested in?
I mean, you can throw the running backs on. In our, you know, Zero RB Targets article, we did mention Trey Benson, but sometimes James Conner will fall because people are excited about Trey Benson. So either running back, tack that onto the stack if you want. Round 18, I don't mind Greg Dortch. You laugh, but like, literally whenever this guy has gotten a chance in the league, he has produced. I think he's a pretty good player, and I think he earns the slot job right away with so many empty snaps and empty, you know, targets to Rondale Moore. Those are gone. Enter Greg Dortch, who is hashtag good at the game. So yeah, Kyler with Marv and one of those guys, or Kyler with McBride and one of those guys, or just go with the alpha stack. Either way, like, Kyler to me feels like right now an absolute priority target at this ADP.
Okay, people, buckle up. And if you're driving, you're not buckled. Come on, get your stuff together. But this is that moment that I was telling you about earlier. And if you want to do this, if you really want to, if you're like really worried about your future, you know, are you going to survive this? Like, text your spouse or your significant other or whoever and just say, I'm listening to a podcast and he just recommended Bryce Young. No context. Don't give any other context. Just do it. And then you can send me the screenshot. But Bryce Young, had a very bad rookie year. And I would say I haven't been super kind with Bryce Young on social media.
I just hope he never finds your Twitter.
I know, but, which is funny. Like, you know, my brother is a huge Alabama fan. My sister went to Alabama. So Bryce Young's like very well respected in our house. You know, my family loves him. But last year, Bryce Young, his three longest TD passes were to the Colts, and the Cowboys, opposing teams. Like, his longest touchdown pass was 18 yards to a Panther. That's it. The rest of them were to other teams. His throwaways, he had 51 total throwaways last year, meaning like, I don't like this play. I'm just going to get out of here and do the smart thing. You know that Dak Prescott has that many total throwaways since week 4 of 2019? It's been like 4 years. Like, Bryce Young got scared, threw the ball away. And here's the statistic that just hurts my heart. Bryce Young dropped back last year against zone coverage, which that's what the NFL does, right? 70% of the time, the NFL is throwing zone coverage at you. He had 434 dropbacks, okay, last year against zone coverage. And yet, he had as many passing touchdowns versus zone coverage as you insert whatever name you want that doesn't play football. Toby Flenderson was what I did for the tweet, but like, Betts, give me another name. Just anybody.
Tobias Funky.
Yeah. My dead grandmother. Whoever. Like, these people had as many touchdown passes against zone coverage as Bryce Young. Zero. And that's pretty bad. It's really hard to do. Sorry. Oh, man. My grandmother's like rolling over. She's like, I'm going to get Kyle. Yeah. Oh, if you look at how this team performed against zone coverage, it was bad. Every single wide receiver, Mingo, Chark, Thielen, for some reason, Terrace Marshall Jr. Like, it was just not good across the board when it came to zone coverage. I could log out now and just say, this is how he was so bad. There is so much room for Bryce Young to pay off at his price at QB28, which is just dead, and 198th overall. Betts, if he's going 198th overall, I'm assuming he's not going drafted sometimes, right?
I think there's been a handful of drafts where he hasn't gone, but I would imagine it's probably like 85% of the time.
Okay. I think people don't care about Bryce Young and they're not thinking about it, or they're like, oh, wow, I guess I drafted a Panther earlier. I guess I can add on a stack. What I would at least throw out is the case for Bryce Young to pay off as a value in best ball. And it really kind of centers around Dave Canales, the new head coach, who was the passing game coordinator and quarterbacks coach with the Seahawks with Geno Smith, and last year's the OC with Baker Mayfield. Those quarterbacks, the one area of the field that they slayed in is against zone coverage. Okay. Geno Smith was tops in the league in passing touchdowns against zone. Geno Smith, out of nowhere. Baker Mayfield ranked second in the league against zone coverage. Geno Smith had the highest quarterback rating in the league against zone coverage. And while I mentioned everything that went wrong with Bryce Young, it's because teams basically kept throwing him the same thing, two high safeties over and over and over again, where he was worst in the league in fantasy points per dropback. But last year, the thing that the Bucs were really good at is against two high safeties. I mean, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin were both top 10 receiving yards against two high looks. So Bryce Young has a path where, you know, in the narrative at least, that Dave Canales can work wonders. He did it with Geno, did it with Baker. And I think we would say that Bryce is more talented than them, or at least as talented, or was clearly taking the 101 as well. Things could change here, and you could also say it could go nowhere but up. But based on best ball, what does he have to do? That's really the question. Can he pay off as a value? What Bryce Young needs to do is give you at least 6 weeks of 18 plus fantasy points. Can he do that? CJ Stroud, guess how many he had last year? Just 6. That's it. Baker Mayfield had more than that. Geno Smith had more than that. But at this price where you're paying it, all you really need is him to have a 15% advance rate. Last year, he had a 14% advance rate. So there are quarterbacks that go super late that don't have to go bonkers in 3 quarterback builds, and they give you unique exposure because a lot of people have just said, this is who Bryce Young is. This is how bad the team is. My question for you, Betts, is if you buy into this narrative, what would you prefer stacking him with? Because you're taking the pass catchers first, and then on the backside, you're doing the backdoor stack with Bryce Young. So any pass catchers you are interested in at their price for the Panthers?
Yeah, when you look at their team, right, like it's Deontay Johnson who kind of goes in like the round 7-8 range. Jonathan Brooks is kind of a round 9, round 10 guy. And then, you know, really it's a quick fall off to the Adam Thielens and Xavier Leggett's Kyle, is apparently what you're supposed to say.
Leggett.
He goes, you know, kind of in the double-digit rounds and falls a little bit. All those guys do. So the nice thing about this is it's a value stack, period. And when you think about this just from a game theory standpoint, like last year, no one saw the Bucks doing what they did, which is why Mike Evans was such an awesome pick at his ADP, which is why Baker was such an awesome pick at his ADP. Like, we just don't know, right? I mean, probabilistically, it's not going to work out. But if it does, that's why he's going where he's going. And that's why you can get just an absolute stacked team around this that, you know, you take a quarterback early and you wait till round 18, or you kind of take one of the middle tier guys that we like. Maybe it's Kyler, and you just wait till round 18 to stack on a Bryce Young stack. So yeah, we just don't know. I mean, there's a blueprint for it that happens with Dave Canales. We've seen it obviously before. I will say my pushback on that is Geno was starting to studs in Metcalf and Lockett. Baker is starting to studs in Evans and Godwin, and obviously Kate Otten. And Bryce Young starting to a wild profile of a guy like Xavier Leggett, Adam Thielen, who's 40 years old or whatever he is now, and Deontay Johnson, who is fine, but clearly not like an alpha wide receiver one, right? So that's my only pushback, but I get it. I think if there is going to be a guy that I do want to tackle on though in best ball and just take a shot of, if this hits and it's a massive upside play, it's Leggett. Because again, we just don't know. Like, he could be a guy that flames out and does nothing in year one. No one would be shocked. He's also wildly athletic, was a man among boys last year at South Carolina, and could be good. Like, what if he is? And we just don't know. I mean, he's a first round pick for a reason. So yeah, you just embrace, I think, a little uncertainty. It's such a cheap value stack that I totally get it. And I think the arguments you laid out for like the best ball lens of it, of where he goes, is really what it's all about.
Yeah. And if you would have gone back to Geno Smith, I think we would have said, like, what's the percentage chance that Geno Smith is a league winner? We'd be like, 2%. Like, it's just, it wasn't on our radar. Last year with Baker, I think we would have said a little higher, but you know, because we like the weapons and stuff, but like Baker would have been like, I don't know, like 5-10%. I think with Bryce Young, you go into this and have a little bit more optimism because you have 2 years. Like with Baker, you're like, oh, well, work for Geno. I don't know if it'll work for Baker. So you can use that template twice over. It's still a leap of faith. I get it. Like, he was so bad. I'm going through the process. I watched all the George Pickens. It takes a little longer to watch all the Bryce Young, and it's not great. But never forget, his first completion in the NFL was to Terrace Marshall Jr. All right, Betts, you're up.
I had to throw that in there. I will say, too, just looking at the staff real quick, like, you know, it was an absolute train wreck the first season in Carolina with how many play callers changed, like snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. Like, 1 week it was Frank Reich, then it was the OC, then it was back to Frank Reich, then it was back to the OC, then Frank Reich got fired. Like, it was just an absolute train wreck. You get some stability with Canales. You also have a front office and a coach that said priority A this offseason, get him weapons. Will they work? I don't know, but they spent literally almost every draft pick on a weapon, right? Like Leggett, Jonathan Brooks, Jatavion Sanders. You bring in Deontay Johnson via trade. Like,
offensive,
they're trying
line help.
Yeah, offensive line help, they're trying. So I get it. But yeah, he's so cheap. I want to talk about Jalen Warren. I am heavily investing in Jalen Warren this year. What could go wrong? RB28 off the board, 93rd overall. There have been some warning signs that perhaps Pittsburgh is not in love with Mr. Najee Harris. Let me read you his snap rates over the last 3 years since he entered the NFL. 84% as a rookie, 66%, 53% coming off a career low. Opportunities per game, 23.6%, or 23.6 rather, 19.1, 17.3 this past year, career low. Fantasy points per game, 15.5, 11.9, 10.6, career low. They declined their fifth-year option. Now we have a new OC. I don't know. Like, Najee's going to get his touches, but if ever there was a year for this to continue to decline, it's with a new OC. Arthur Smith has never made rational decisions, so this could look silly come your season's end. But look at these two players. Like, you cannot compare Najee to Jalen Warren and say Najee is the better choice to get in there for this play. He's been so inefficient. He's been absolutely atrocious. But Jalen Warren has been one of, if not the most efficient backs over the last two or three seasons in the league. Last season, among 69 running backs with at least 50 carries, he was third in yards after contact per attempt, fourth in breakaway rush rate, second in missed tackles forced per attempt, and as a pass catcher, 8th in yards per route run. I love where he goes. He's such a cornerstone piece for me in zero RB builds, or as your RB2 if you take a hero RB approach, like you grab a Brees or a Bijan, something like that early on. Tackle on Jalen Warren as your RB2 at RB28 price tag. Like, he's sort of kind of just a perfect ADP where, you know, last year he was RB25. Najee stayed healthy all year. Like, what if Najee goes down? What if they just turn their back on Najee? They already did by declining the fifth year option and give Jalen Warren more touches here. So I think you see at least a split backfield, but a very good chance based off how terrible Najee has been that Warren sees more work this year. And that's not baked into the ADP because of that kind of uncertainty with Najee and where they're at. But I just love betting on explosive players in an offense we know is going to run the football.
I feel like Najee has aged like 8 years since he's gotten in the league.
Like, it feels not, like he's 29.
He came into the league as an older prospect, which we kind of ignored because of the draft capital and how good he was at Alabama and how many passes he caught, right? Like, as a rookie, it was just an insane amount. But he's just not utilized the same way in the passing game. Like, he's kind of irrelevant when you look at targets per route run, where Warren is just off the charts. Like, he is going to show up continually as a guy that they believe in and they want to target. And you've seen that with Arthur Smith. He does target his running backs. He just doesn't target wide receivers. So who knows? Maybe George Pickett did. Like, what is his ceiling outcome, Jalen Warren, to you? Like, RB28 right here, I feel comfortable taking him there. But like, if Najee stays healthy, what's his ceiling? And then if Najee's hurt, what's his ceiling?
Yeah, if Najee stays healthy, I think there's a chance he could get there on efficiency and he could see enough volume to be like the RB 15, 16, somewhere in that range. If Najee goes down, I mean, I don't want to say that he would get all the work because he's not necessarily that type of profile back and Arthur Smith does not make smart decisions, but he would get, I mean, he saw over 220 opportunities last year. Like, he could push for 300 opportunities in that scenario, and this player is that efficient. The RB 12, somewhere in that range, if everything breaks right. And that's, again, an 80th percentile outcome and 90th percentile outcome. So it's not likely, but I think it's in the range of outcomes for a player that's just so efficient.
Yeah. I believe, and I need to look this up, like, he still hasn't caught a receiving touchdown yet in his career, despite all of his awesome receiving work. Yeah, no receiving touchdowns yet. Same thing with Josh Jacobs, who still does not have a receiving touchdown despite all the years. So there's a lot of things working for him. 61 receptions last year and no touchdowns. That will certainly change. But yeah, Jalen Warren is a fun player. He's very Austin Eckler, like undrafted free agent, this bowling ball that comes in and it's just a fantasy force. So let's take a quick break and we'll talk about our fades. All right, let's get a little spicy here. Because Betts and I decided that when we're talking about best ball fades, we're not going to tell you like, hey, you should fade Will Levis. It's like, you don't lose as much there. We want to give you players that are going fairly high. And we're saying in our rankings, they're lower and they have to do a lot to pay off at their draft cost. So we will get some changes. Like, I think some of these opinions will change for fades if the ADP drops. If we find out, hey, this is a really good matchup for week 15, 16, 17 when the schedule is released. So any thoughts about a fade, like what we mean by that? Because I just want to clarify.
Yeah, I think a good way to think about it is like a player going super early or at least relatively early and then thinking about like what they have to do at that ADP to be a quote unquote good pick or a guy that helps you advance or give you a massive week in the playoffs, like something like that. And when you think about it, when you're taking someone in the first three or four rounds, like you should try to think about the downside case for that player. It's like, how could this go sideways? And if it does, like, you know, how bad of a pick is this? Or I think about it another way. It's like the guys I'm going to talk about, I think they're going to have good seasons, but a good season where they're going is not good enough. And when you're taking guys in the first three rounds, they need to have massive upside in the range of outcomes. And to me, when I fade players that go early, they're clearly good picks. Like all these guys in the first 36, 48 picks are good picks. They're there for a reason in ADP. But just think about the upside case and really, is it in the range of outcomes for them to be a true difference maker for you? And if they're not, generally, I'll come in underweight that player.
Yeah. And once again, you can like this player. It doesn't mean we hate this player. Like I'm going to talk about Sam Laporta, tight end for the Lions first. If I had him in Dynasty, I would be doing backflips right now. So excited about Sam Laporta. We will be playing him in DFS. But in best ball, he's going as a third round pick. And I'm not trying to take anything away from how great he was last year. The tight end one in fantasy, the highest points per game ever for a rookie tight end, the most tight end rookie receptions of all time, tied Gronk for the most rookie receiving touchdowns with 10. All of that's awesome. The problem is, based on his yardage and yardage expectation, he seems like a clear regression candidate. And I hate also mentioning those kind of words because you have 1 year sample size. So I could be totally wrong. This is just who he is. Sam Laporta, greatest tight end of all time, 10 touchdowns every single year. You saw it last year, so it's really hard to see something different. But 10 touchdowns on 889 receiving yards sounds really good. But over the last decade, every single tight end that had 10 plus touchdowns with less than 900 receiving yards regressed in the touchdown department the next year. Mark Andrews is a perfect example. I think it's a good comp here. Mark Andrews in 2019 broke out, had 852 receiving yards, 10 touchdowns. Next year, he had 7. That's fine. But every other tight end on this list regressed a ton. Antonio Gates, 12-5. Jimmy Graham, 10-2. Julius Thomas, who broke out for the Broncos in those Peyton Manning teams, 12-5. Tyler Eifert, Jimmy Graham again, Eric Ebron, Robert Tonyan, George Kittle, all of these guys regressed in the touchdown department to something much lower. So if Sam Laporta got 6 or 7 touchdowns, that's a good season. But as a third round pick, that is just terrible. And his receiving yardage, which is actually the strongest, stickiest statistic for tight ends, he was only 7th best among tight ends. In yards per team pass attempt, he was 6th best. So all of that to say, I think that Sam Laporta is a really expensive version of George Kittle or Jake Ferguson or even way later Dallas Goedert, who I don't think is nearly as good. But you're paying a high price for a guy on a good offense, but you can find that production, you know, a couple rounds later. So I will probably not have much Sam Laporta if he stays in the third round.
Yeah, he's expensive. That's the issue, right, with this pick. It's like when you think about the tight end landscape, like all the elite guys are going a little bit later this year than they were last year, which is why I love grabbing one of these elite options. The issue is like when you take Sam Laporta in round 3, you're passing on legit wide receiver 2s who have massive, massive upside if things break right. And so that's where the opportunity cost for me comes in. And it's like I'd almost always rather have the wide receiver, and I'll take Dalton Kincaid 2 rounds later. I'll take the leap of faith with Kyle Pitts. I'll take Jake Ferguson in round 9. Like, that's kind of where my head is at. It's not that I don't like Sam Laporta. Obviously, we love what he did in year 1. But like you said, if he comes out and again has, you know, 950 receiving yards, you'd be like, that's awesome for a tight end. If it's 6 touchdowns instead of 10, or if it's 7 instead of 10, you're probably getting the same number of points out of your roster from a tight end later in the draft. Now, you're not going to get it from someone in round 17. Like, you still need kind of one of the elite guys. So to me, the arbitrage play is still go in the elites, but maybe kind of take someone else in that range rather than Laporta. That's where I'm at anyway. The other thing too is like you can paint a picture for almost all the elite tight ends that go, you know, round 4, round 5, round 6 is like those guys could emerge as like the number one option. Like Dalton Kincaid could be the number one option for Josh Allen. As long as Amon-Ra is healthy, that's just never going to happen. So yeah, I love Laporta. I want some exposure, but to me, he's a guy that I'll probably really only take when he slips past ADP.
Yeah, I love the range of Kincaid, Andrews. I mean, let's lose some more money on Mark Andrews, man.
Oh, brother, let's I am all the way in.
I like Pitts, who's going past pick 60, and Kittle. Like, all of those players, I'm totally fine with if you want to grab a tight end, and then you only need 2. So, yeah, I mean, man, 29th overall, I can't fathom paying that price. But anyway, you give me the next fade.
Yeah, this is another player that, you know, certainly I could see the path where this goes very well, but it's an expensive player to take in your draft, and it's Josh Jacobs, who's going off the board right now at RB10, 33rd overall. So again, this is a top third, you know, 36 overall player in the third round. Sometimes he goes in the back of the second round. There's just a massive opportunity cost here, not only for the player himself, but what you're passing on. There's so much data that shows hero RB and zero RB works well on underdog. It's just been a fact. You know, the advance rates are better, the playoff advance rates are better over the last couple of years. That information I highlighted in my article that's on the site with our late round targets, just kind of a rationale of how that works. So when you take Josh Jacobs, you are passing on an elite wide receiver. That's my first issue. The second issue is if I am going to dip my toes into this running back pool, they had better have RB2, RB3, the overall RB1 in their potential range of outcomes. And there are just so many warning signs that Josh Jacobs might be approaching the decline faster than you think. 2 years ago, he led the NFL in rushing. So I'm not saying he's old and he's 30 years old and it can't ever happen. I could see a path where he bounces back and it's a good offense. We love the Packers. But look at these numbers. Like, missed tackles forced per attempt dropped in 3 straight seasons. Explosive rush rate bottomed out last year. Yards per carry, 3.5, was one of the worst marks in football. Next gen stats, rushing yards over expectation, 41st out of 49 qualified running backs with Alvin Kamara, Miles Sanders, Jamal Williams of the world. Like, he was so bad last year. And again, you think, okay, he's going to bounce back. I know he will. They always bounce back, these players. But in Marv's, you know, Dynasty Life Cycles article, I always highlight this. It was astounding to me that, like, the vast majority of players fall off in their career at running back when they're in the NFL for about 6 years, sometimes 7. He is entering year 6 in the NFL. And so if he has any bit of decline in him as a player, again, at this price, that isn't a possible range of outcomes. Like, for him to pay this off, he cannot decline at all. If he is a 1,000-yard rusher with 5 or 6 touchdowns, that's not good enough at this price tag. Like, you need a guy that can give you massive ceiling at an opportunity cost that's just too high. So for me, I have found myself full fade on Josh Jacobs at this ADP. You know, it's just a bet I'll make every time at a running back position that, again, I like to target wide receivers.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs, I have him in Dynasty, and I'm like, okay, maybe I can get a year out of it. But this, what you're paying is you are passing up. Let me give you some of the receivers around him. You know, it's DK Metcalf. It's Devonta Smith, who we're both really, really high on. Cooper Kupp is there. Tank Dell is right after him, too. And then this is where the quarterbacks are going. If you take an elite quarterback right after him, Josh Allen is the pick before him, and then Hurts, Lamar, Patrick Mahomes. So I just have a hard time. I don't love drafting a running back there. And let's compare these two, because they're going back to back in terms of running back. Josh Jacobs right now is going as the RB10. Travis Etienne is going as the RB11. I have Etienne ahead in our rankings. Do you prefer one of them?
I think I have Etienne ahead as well, but truthfully, I'm not aggressively targeting him either. Again, it's just a structural type of thing for me, but, you know, I get it. And I think he's a player that I'd bet more on the explosiveness than someone like Josh Jacobs, who, like I said, you know, with the metrics last year was just abysmal.
Yeah, there's a spot after Achan goes at RB8. So the end of round 2 to the end of round 4, there's only 3 running backs there. It's Henry, Jacobs, Etienne, and then Pacheco's kind of on that fringe of 4 or 5. So it's a weird spot in the draft, because if you haven't taken a running back yet, you're very tempted to say, like, okay, well, I need to anchor to somebody who's going to get a ton of a huge workload, who's in a good offense. Jacobs makes sense. But yeah, if you're going on efficiency numbers, I don't love it. I feel like he could be just stable, but not like a league winner where he goes at RB10. Like, if he was going as RB15 or 16, I could be in on that price tag. When there's other guys like Kenneth Walker feels very similar to me, and he's going way later. You know, David Montgomery feels like another player that you and I are always betting on because he's going way later. Like, I just, those are the players I like a lot more than Josh Jacobs at his price. So let me give you a player that I think we disagree on. It's a fade for me. I can't pay the price. And it's some guy named Brandon Ayuk. He's going as wide receiver 11. Do you hate this?
Fade and Ayuk, targeting Bryce Young. I mean, that is the show that we're on here today. So yeah, what could go wrong?
I'm sure we've had a couple people turn it off, and I get it. You know what? You can't see me. This isn't on video. So I'm staring right at you and going, I could be wrong. I could totally be wrong with Brandon Ayuk, but he's going so high. I mean, I can't fathom paying this price, considering when you look at his career, he's never finished here before. Even last year, he was wide receiver 14, year before wide receiver 15. He's never finished this high. So you're taking him at his ceiling, in my opinion, or you need a Debo injury. And you're asking him to repeat an insane season on efficiency. So I'm going to give you some efficiency numbers bets, and you tell me if these are outliers. He led all wide receivers in fantasy points per target. Does that feel sticky to you?
I mean, this offense, I'm always hesitant to say, no, this isn't sticky, because every year, you know, Debo is just like, this is what I do. and then Brock Purdy's touchdown, you know, rate does not make sense. So like, I think part of it is offense related. Like he's just attached to that offense.
Yes.
But no, I would say that's not necessarily sticky.
Yeah. Considering he was wide receiver 36 in expected fantasy points per game, wide receiver 21 in expected fantasy points per route run. So if you look at him on a routes run basis, like what was expected based on what he did on the field, it was more in the Amari Cooper Pity City range. Okay. So that's kind of like what, based on his volume, he was at. And he just exceeded it based on how efficient this offense was. His passer rating when targeted was awesome, 126.8. And that is one of the least sticky year-to-year statistics, passer rating. His yards per out run of over three is top 10 best since 2006. Like, off the charts, Brandon Ayuk was incredible. The years before, 1.76, 1.68, 1.91. Those are good numbers, but you wouldn't call those elite or over three, like breaking fantasy football. And I think this past year was the outlier. We also could look at first downs, which first downs per route run is a pretty sticky stat as well. 81% of his receptions bets went for a first down or a touchdown. And I explain it that way because touchdowns are a first down too, but that's the highest among wide receivers over the last 5 years. Okay. So that is like over the top. His success rate. So when he caught the ball, did he get enough for a first down? Or on second down, did he get 60% of the yards? Was 70%. That's the second best over the last 5 years. The only wide receiver better than him was Michael Thomas's insane 2019 season. All of that to say is that Brandon Ayuk, when you look at what he's done, I think we double count what he did last year in his efficiency numbers and then look at them and go, in best ball, he's just going to crush again. In best ball, he was the wide receiver 16 in best ball points added. So, did I explain how impossible it is for him to repeat last year?
It just sounds like you don't like the good players, and that's fine.
I don't like efficiency, apparently.
I guess not. Yeah, this Niners offense, I mean, just as a whole, it's so tough for best ball because, yeah, you want exposure. Like, you see what Brock Purdy does every Sunday and the play calling that Kyle Shanahan has, and they put up 30 points. I mean, we talk about it on the DFS show all the time. It's like, they're probably going to put up 30 points. You probably want one of these guys in your lineup, right? The issue is CMC goes number one overall. Brandon Ayuk goes in round two. Deebo Samuel goes at the 2-3 turn. George Kittle goes in round six. Like, if everyone stays healthy, one of or two of these ADPs are wrong come season's end. That's the tricky part. However, if someone goes down, the upside on these guys is immense. So for me, I found myself being okay, you know, taking one or two of these guys, but I certainly don't want to be, you know, over, like going all in on a stack because I think it's gonna be really tough for all these guys to hit. Very similar to the discussion last year with the Bengals guys who are, you know, both going in round two, and then Burrow was going in like round four, round five before the injury. The Eagles guys were all going in the first three rounds last year. Like, what players and teams have to do at that high of an ADP is very different than teams and players and stacking partners going in rounds 15, 16, 17, obviously, right? So I find myself stuck with this offense because, like, again, you want exposure.
Yes.
But it's going to be tough for these guys to pay off these ADPs if everyone stays healthy.
You need an injury. And I don't like going into a situation where one of these guys has to get canceled out. Last year, Brandon Ayuk was going 53rd overall. Like, he would be a smash at that because you'd look at, you know, the board and you go, wow, this, I'm getting a wide receiver, but this is 2024 best ball. So
the other thing too, just to, I hate, sorry to cut you off, Kyle. Yeah, the other thing too, and I don't think Ricky Pearsall is like a threat to anyone's routes or playing time.
Because he's a turd?
Well, I wouldn't say that. You probably would. But, you know, they replace Juwan Jennings with a guy like that, with a first round wide receiver. Now, I don't know that we can, it's not worth arguing on this show of like, should he have gone round one or not? But like, they took him in round one. They value him. So like, we need to keep our mind open that that player could also be talented and might earn some targets as well throughout the year. So there, I think there's a lot of ways where these really expensive 49ers go sideways, truthfully. So yeah, I get it. I hate it because I love Ayuk. I think he's such a talented player, but I agree the price tag is quite expensive.
Yeah, I have players ahead of him. Drake London, Chris Olave, Deebo Samuel, Nico Collins. Like, those are all guys that I have ranked ahead of Brandon Ayuk. So right now I have him as my 22nd overall player. And so I never end up getting him because he ends up going way too early. But you have a wide receiver that you apparently want to fade, and all he's done, Betts, over the last 8 years has averaged over 150 targets. How dare you?
I'm going to sound like an idiot in like 7 or 8 months when Davante Adams is crushing as he always does. But alas, my player that I'll probably be fading or at least coming in underweight on in round two is Davante Adams. And again, similar to the Josh Jacobs thing, I think Davante Adams probably has a pretty good year. And what I mean for his standards is like around 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns. But if he does that at this price tag, that is going to be a terrible season relative to expectation for this ADP. Again, he's coming off the board wide receiver 13, about 18th overall. This is a player who's turned 32 years old in December. So he's kind of at the point where, you know, age 29, fine for a wide receiver. Age 30, if they're elite, it's cool. Age 31, if they're elite, it's cool. But we've talked about this on the Dynasty show, like as you get to age 32 and beyond, it really does start to fall off. So I always want to be a year early on those players at their archetype. When you look at some of the efficiency stuff for him last year, his yards per route run has dropped in 3 straight seasons. His yards per target has dropped in 3 straight seasons. Yards per catch, 3 straight years. Yards after the catch per reception, 3 straight years. Like the writing is kind of on the wall that no, he's not at the end, but he's not the player he was 3-4 years ago. And so again, at a second round ADP, that's not the kind of guy I want to invest in. And you might say, well, Betts, don't you think, you know, the quarterback play was the issue last year? Of course it was. I agree. I watched Monday Night Football with Jimmy G sailing the ball over Davante Adams' head over and over and over again. In steps Aiden O'Connell. Now he's not that great either. But here's the issue. This quarterback this year is going to be either Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew. So you're not really getting a quarterback upgrade, because when you look at these numbers, and this is insane when you look at kind of these two players, here's where these guys ranked in the following categories. PFF grade, AOC 28th, Gardner Minshew 31st. Yards per attempt, AOC 29th, Gardner 26th. Completion rate over expected, 39th for AOC, 38th for Gardner Minshew. Catchable target rate, 32nd for AOC, 33rd for Gardner Minshew. They are the same player. So it doesn't matter who wins the starting job, in my opinion, especially when you consider like under Antonio Pierce and Luke Getsy, this team has one identity. Run the football, try to get Zamir White 100 yards, and hope they win 13-10 every game. Like the Getsy offense, I have zero faith in, man. I mean, in 2022, they were 27th in pace, 32nd in neutral pass rate. Last year, 31st in pace, 30th in neutral pass rate. That's what Antonio Pierce wants, rather. So I just don't see the volume, like the upside for the passing attack to go nuclear this year. I'm out on Davante, man. Wide receiver 13 feels too expensive for a guy who's shown some signs of decline throughout the years.
Yeah, last year we were a little bit lower too. He was going around that 1-2 turn, and now you get a little bit of a discount, but still, I mean, man, like 19th overall, I'm going to be taking Debo. I'm going to be taking Nico. Just offenses we like more. I hate it because he's been so consistent for so long. And the statistics that I was looking at, like, man, he's just averages at some point it's going to fall out. And you're starting to see that in Dynasty. I think something that you are good at, and I think it's worth noting, is when you start to see a downturn at this point in a player's career, it probably means you just need to like get out. And, you know, if they prove you wrong, they prove you wrong. But really, there is a time coming. Like with Julio, I wish, you know, we would have been a year too early. You know, those are the kind of guys. Same thing. Like, is Cup done? We saw a decline, and yet he's still going fairly high in drafts, like 24th overall, or wide receiver 24. Like, that's tough. So where do you have Davante instead of wide receiver 13?
I've got him as like a mid third round pick. So again, like if he falls far enough, sure. But I just don't think he will.
Yeah. All right, one more segment.
Prop it like it's hot.
If you want our props, you can get them in the DFS Pass, which is part of the Ultimate Draft Kit Plus. And you can chat with us in our props channel, our DFS channel, all of that good stuff in the Discord, ballersdiscord.com. We're going to give you 2 season-long props that are quite hot. I'm going to first say this is one that Betts and I went back and forth on. It's not official. Yours is official. You're much more official than I am. But so Dak Prescott, I know. Dak Prescott's passing touchdown prop is at 32.5. That means I'm taking the under. Now, Dak has passed this twice in his career, and I get it. This is more of a math play for the math kids out there, mathletes. It's really hard to repeat year-over-year touchdown rate. And when I take an under on a player that's up there, 32.5 is a massive total for any quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, whoever. You're basically asking them to never get hurt and to stay on the same efficiency train. The problem with the Cowboys is that there are two passing options that you should feel good about, CeeDee Lamb, Jake Ferguson, and then is Brandon Cook still alive? Like he kind of came on at a stretch, but it's tough. And then Betts, who is their wide receiver three? Is it Jalen Tolbert? Because they don't even know.
On paper, it is Jalen Tolbert.
Okay. Yeah. So I like this right now. I think I would just take Dax under. And this is, by the way, something I do is I will just take three or four different quarterback passing touchdown unders. And I think over time, if you just do those like Cousins I did last year, it was unfortunate, but like, injuries happen, and injuries happen definitely at the quarterback position. So Dak Prescott under 32.5 passing touchdowns.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before the show of just like some of these elite offenses are so thin at pass catcher. Like, heaven forbid anything happens to CeeDee Lamb, like, it's over. Like, who are they throwing the ball to, right? Like, it's such an issue. Same thing with like, like the Bills. Like, Kincaid's great, but like this wide receiver room is just kind of a mess without Diggs. So there's definitely some teams that I think at the top that are a little more fragile than you might think.
And if you think about it, inside the five last year, Tony Pollard was historically bad. So some of those touchdowns that you saw boosted last year when you get to 36 passing touchdowns were from them literally just not being able to fall into the end zone. Now, maybe the corpse of Zeke Elliott can do it this year, and Rico Dowdle and the boys, but I think that there's a little bit of room for some more rushing touchdowns as well.
Dude, Jerry just saw, you know, Tony not getting in the end zone, saw Zeke falling in like week 15, 16, 17 last year, and he was like, we got to bring him back. That's our dude.
I mean, with Zeke, you know, Dak's passing touchdowns were, you know, early in his career, 23, 22, 22, 30 with Zeke. So, you know, the correlation is clear.
100% hit rate, obviously. The official play we gave out, both in Discord and on the site in our props tracker, Xavier Leggett, I'm going to keep messing that up, Leggett, under 700.5 receiving yards. We found that at -110 on BetMGM. It's already moved to like -150 on DK and a couple other books. I would not take that, but you know, I messaged corporate today. I said, hey, corporate, which is Andy, Mike, and Jason, can you give me some, you know, sneak peek here of what do you have for projections for Carolina? Our number right now, this is a little sneak preview. This is available in the UDK Plus when it comes out, June 1st. You can get all the projections and you can do this stuff yourself, but we were projecting closer to about 600 yards. So that's a pretty big edge. And you think about a props market where so much can go south. Injury, maybe he's just not that good. I know you think Bryce Young might bounce back. What if he doesn't? Like, there's just so many outs for this to go under. So under 700.5 receiving yards for Leggett.
No, I don't. No, there's a percentage chance he bounces back. I'm not calling.
You think he does?
It.
No, you called it. You said today, everyone, all your bankroll, round 18 Bryce Young to win all the money.
Hey, as the kids say, it can't get worse, right? It can't.
What
there
if it
is
does?
A scenario where it's the exact same and things are really, really bad. All right, Betts, sign us off.
Yeah, well, on that note, geez, Kyle, you were so positive earlier. Now you're just such a downer. But fun show today. Always fun talking about fades and values and some props. So good episode. We're back next week for more best ball talk. Like I mentioned, more articles coming to the site. Check those out. Get in the Ultimate Draft Kit. Plus, we'll see you next Friday.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS and Betting Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at thefantasyfootballers.com.